You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello and welcome along to another edition of William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast. This is Friday's edition that you are tuned into now. And we've got jumping action at Kempton and Wetherby. Then into the evening we're at Wolverhampton and Dundalk on the all weather. And you'll hear every race live on William Hill Racing Radio in the company of Gordon Brown, Gary Capewell and Paddy Aspel from 1:10pm. Set to be a fantastic day as ever on Friday. But joining myself, Sam Norris, ahead of all the action to offer up his thoughts on four races on Friday is Rory DeLaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well in the grand scheme of things.
Good, good. Are you finally recovering from your cold that has smited you down for months now?
Not entirely gone, it has to be said, but I'm feeling a lot better in myself.
Good to hear you are heading in the right direction. Let's touch on some of the news first of all, Roy, before we get stuck into Friday's action. And first of all, some big festival news regarding one of the warm favourites of the JLT. Kilter Vic has been ruled out for the festival and looks likely that he'll miss the rest of the season. Are we now starting to see the effects of his last flight blunder and near fall last time out starting to catch up with him?
Yeah, it looks that way. He of course, was made a warm favourite for the JLT, having beaten Blair Perron at Leberstown, despite being all but down at the final fence. It was amazing that Ruby Walsh didn't come off him. It was everything bar a fall. Lost all momentum.
Yeah.
Ruby managed to sit tight. He dropped to third place but rallied to win. Seemed to be okay. I think most people thought that, given that he sort of did the splits, he'd be stiff enough afterwards. But the initial reports were that he came out of the race fine. But it turns out that a statement from Willie Mullins yesterday said that when they stepped up his work again, they found that he had a suspensory issue. And that's almost certainly as a result of that fall. And it just shows you that it's very difficult to tell in those scenarios whether a horse is entirely sound. You'll remember, of course, Ruby Walsh again riding Cotto Star in a novice chase. Mm. At Exeter early in his career, which would have been an absolute formality for him, but he took a soft fall and Ruby remounted and he very nearly managed to win that race. And then it turned out that he had a slab fracture of his knee, which kept him out for the rest of that season. So hopefully Kilter Vic will make a full recovery. He's clearly a huge talent, but it raises questions about continuing horses who've made very bad mistakes and how you can tell whether a horse is sound or not. The bottom line is that when the adrenaline's pumping, both in the jockey and the horse, the instinct is to go on. And, of course, remounting has been banned in the wake of that Cotto Star incident. And there was a bit of a debate, I noticed, on Twitter last night and this morning regarding whether the wise thing to do in that situation is pull a horse up, even if he is capable of rallying. But it's a very difficult call to make. And, of course, it's very easy to be wise in hindsight and say, you know, well, if he'd looked after the horse, then he'd be ready for Cheltenham. But no one thought that until the announcement came that he was going to miss the festival.
Yeah, that leaves Bristol Dunmire the 3-1 favourite for the JLT, ahead of More of That and Outlander at 5s, then Lamy Surge 8-1, Shaneshill 8-1, Sizing John at 8-1. Does that open up the race a little bit more for you, or is Bristol Dunmire just taking Kilter Vic's place as the warm order?
Well, obviously it's made a fair difference to the top of the market. Bristol Dunmire was, I suppose, around a 7-1 shot yesterday, and has been well backed, obviously, with the absence of the market leader. The Anti-Post book has got the elasticity to survive this kind of thing without making wholesale changes. If the going comes up fast at Cheltenham, it would be a bit of a question for Bristol Dunmire, who has seemed at his best in the mud so far. He was very impressive as a juvenile, winning the finale at Chepstow last year on heavy, and then didn't quite go on from that when he met better ground in the spring. And he's been very impressive again on soft ground this year. He was beaten, of course, by Armad at Sandown in the Henry VIII, and looked to lack a gear or two that day compared to the winner, who would be very good over 2 miles on good ground. So it's no given that that he'd be a good thing there. But there's every chance the ground will come up softer than usual for the Cheltenham Festival anyway. That's very much up in the air with the weather as it is. We should mention More of That, who a few people thought should be running in the Gold Cup earlier in the season. That's clearly not going to happen. But he's not going to run at the weekend, it was announced this morning. He was due to run at Newbury on Saturday. He won't run now. He was due to run in that Sandown race won by Bristol Demae, but was taken out, both for different reasons. Taken out there because Barry Geraghty wasn't available, which is a strange call, I thought. And now he's been taken out because the ground won't be suitable. I think you've got to have major concerns, both about More of That and to a larger degree about John Joe O'Neill's stable generally. You know, More of That as a horse who's he's had a couple of outings over fences, but not for a while, and he could do with more experience if he's going to go to a Grade 1 event at the festival. And the fact that he keeps missing races, even though the word from the yard is it's not a big deal, he's ready to run, we just rather not run in these conditions, or without Barry Geraghty, I think that rings an alarm bell regarding the yard as a whole. So I think you should just sort of watch your best with John Joe until there are more positive signs. He is a yard... in the past where they've been able to come straight out of a slump into very good form for the festival, but you just need to watch your bets a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, that's the injury news and the JLT dealt with. Do you want to get your opinion then, Rory, on yesterday we were in the midst of another failed gamble. Four Shane Kelly rides, all well backed, one at Suddle, three at Kempton. I think we ended up with one withdrawn, three unplaced. Very similar to the Sheena West gamble, in inverted commas, of a few months ago. Are these gambles ever something you get involved with, or do they all have to be taken with a big pinch of salt?
Yeah, I think there need to be questions asked about exactly what the nature of these bets are. Of course, what happens is there is a big market move. The early price market is very weak. People backing horses in multiples, particularly people opening new accounts with certain firms and backing the same horses in multiples, would immediately ring alarm bells with the traders off the firms that are taking the bets. They will then slash those prices. People will talk about these big price moves. A lot of people will put two and two together, say make Barney Curley out of two and two, and follow in and back these horses at shorter odds. And what happens then is if those same horses have been backed with other firms as well, you will get people running for cover. We had a scenario where even though the Sheena West horses were just a dreadful bunch, and they ended up, none of them ended up looking particularly fit. Most of them been off the course for a while. Yeah. The owner, who's a former trainer, claimed that they were all fit to run for their lives and that he'd had a proper bet on them. Yeah. But they ran appallingly. That wasn't the case with yesterday's runners, but there was a case even with those who didn't stand out on paper, who looked to have very little chance on the book. They were priced up at even money all round at one stage, because when these gambles start, and of course the Barney Curley gamble, which is just over 2 years ago now, must have cost the industry a fair bit. But there are systems in place to make sure that liabilities are limited there. And the question is whether some of these gambles are not just... snowballs, you know, it's not just someone having a big bet and then other people latching onto it and following in at shorter odds. Whether they're just not orchestrated as pretend gambles in the first place, and someone is somehow managing to make money on the back of that. There's been a suggestion that the ability to cash bets out is the focus here, and that if you can back four horses at 25 to 1. In a Yankee or in doubles and trebles or in accumulator, whatever it happens to be, and then create a snowball effect through social media, which means that they're backed into even money, which happened with the Sheena West runners. If you're then able to cash your initial bet out for a massive profit before the even run, then you don't care whether the horses run badly. You're basically, you know, shorting the market, if you like. You're playing the stock market rather than playing the horses.
Yes.
And it's the mug punters, in inverted commas, who are following in afterwards, who are enabling that scenario. Now, I don't know if that's the case. I think it's a question that needs to be asked. And I think it was asked with yesterday's bets. And there's a bit of stonewalling from the one company who seemed to have taken all the initial bets. This wasn't sort of an industry-wide gamble in the first place. Clearly, from mid-morning onwards, people's interest was peaked and they would have been betting all those horses for small stakes. But I think initially it was all with one firm. That firm offers a cash out facility. They claim that it wouldn't have been possible for anyone to make any money out of it. But I think that needs to be examined. And I think if you do have that, the possibility of creating a false gamble, then taking a profit on it and leading others, using the gullible to create that profit, then I think that needs to be looked at. Whether it is true or not, I don't know, but I think questions need to be asked as to whether that is a possibility. And if it is, then I think the only way you should be able to use a cash-out facility is basically to lay off the last part of a bet. The way it existed in the first place was for football punters who did ACCAs. So you backed nine teams, eight of them were playing at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and the last game was the Saturday night or the Sunday afternoon game. Mm. And you suddenly realised that for your tenner, your stake had rolled up to 10 grand and you needed the last one to make it 20 grand. And you thought, to be honest, I'd be happy with 10 grand here. And you had an opportunity of taking the profit, but getting paid less than your bet was officially worth. And that's fair enough, because it works for the bookmaker as well, because they know that they're getting value on the cash out themselves. For a bet that hasn't even started, there's no way of really putting a value on that. So it is open to manipulation, whereas running up bets aren't. Yeah. They clearly are what they are. So I think it makes a lot more sense that people should be able to cash out bets when they get to the final leg, but not before the bet kicks off. Now, that may be in place already, but the answers that I've heard about this are a little bit woolly.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it today, because the coverage in the media thus far has been a little bit shaky. I think we're obsessed with whether a bet has been landed or not, and it seems to be a black and white thing. Is this a failed gamble or is it a successful gamble? Well, I think mostly we're in a grey area.
Yes.
You know, the question is it really a gamble at all? Who is taking who for a ride? You know, the notion is that there's an intrepid punter and a big bookie going head-to-head. And that's very rarely the case these days.
Yeah, sure. An interesting caveat to the day's racing. We must move on, though, to Friday's action. Now, Rory, we've got four races to come on this edition of the podcast, and we start at Wetherby with their 3 o'clock. We've got a handicap hurdle here over 2 miles and 3 furlongs. Just four runners line up for this one. What do you make of the quartet?
It's a slightly disappointing turnout, given that it should be a decent quality race, class three handicap, open to horses rated not to 140. And there are question marks over a couple of them. The Wallace line hasn't been seen over hurdles since the Cheltenham Festival last year, and he would be an interesting one on the pick of his form, but all we've seen of him since is a fair run in the flat at Wolverhampton, so his fitness needs to be taken on trust. But he's hard to rule out. Minstrel's Gallery has got one very good piece of recent form when winning at Doncaster. But if you get a chance to watch that race, you'll see that it was an exceptionally good ride from Wayne Hutchinson. He's only ridden the horse once. Heavy ground that day. Wayne was the only one to go around the inside and try to get on the chase course between hurdles. Mm. Everyone was trying to look for the best ground. It was the last race of the day. The ground was badly churned up. And a lot of jockeys went to the outside of the track, which you tend to do on bad ground. Wayne did the opposite. And he basically raced off the standard line, so he was racing on ground that hadn't been used for the rest of the day. That was an exceptionally good ride, and for me it definitely won on the race. So it's debatable whether Minstrel's Gallery really ran to that form in winning that race, and the rest of his efforts this season are not as good. So I'd want to be against him for that reason. Bowdler's Magic is high enough in the weights now, I think. Was a fair second at Fakenham last time out, but this is a better class of track, and he's meeting one or two better horses. For all, it's only a small field. I thought the one to beat was probably Maxi T, ex-John Joe O'Neill runner, a horse who'd shown plenty of promise as a juvenile, and stepped up on that promise when winning a handicap hurdle at Kelso from the progressive Alize De Janeiro, who had done very, very well this season, had progressed by the run. He didn't really run to the same form when turned out quickly. It turned out a couple of weeks later here. But I think you can forgive him that. It was a real slog at Kelso, particularly. Well, it gets very, very deep there. And it was heavy ground again at Wetherby last time out. But I think the Kelso form is very solid. And it's just a case of whether he can get back to that straight away. So if you just... I mean, it wasn't a bad run last time out. If he runs to that level again, he could still win this race. But I think he's better than the bare form he showed here last time. Again, the going will be heavy. He's up a bit in trip, but he should stay this sort of trip. His best efforts come at 2.25 at Kelso. So this 2.3 at a slightly sharper track should be fine for him. And he's got less questions to answer than the rest of them from me, so he gets the vote.
Okay, then Maxi T for Rory in the 3 o'clock for Mickey Hammond and Finian O'Toole. We move on to the 4.10 now. Again, We're at Weatherby for this race, a three-mile handicap chase here and a qualifier for the Challenger Staying Chase Series final. We've got seven runners that line up for this one. Talk us through these, Rory.
Pretty interesting race on paper. Not many of these that you could rule out at all. I think it's a pretty open race. The kind of race you could you'd go sort of 7-2, 4-1 the field in, and you wouldn't rule any of the runners out. But the one who makes most appeal to me is King of the Wolves, who's a bit better than the form of his last two runs. He was a winner at Ayr in the spring off a mark of 124. He's £6 higher now, but he's been running off similar marks and handicaps on his last few starts. Runner-up at Perth in September, and then just a little bit below that form at Carlisle on Haydock on his last two starts. But those races have come at an extended 3.25 miles on Carlisle's stiff track, and then 3.5 at Haydock. And both times, he's travelled very, very well until the closing stages. On both occasions, to give the impression that going beyond 3 miles just found him out, particularly at Haydock, where he looked the likeliest winner at the top of the straight, but then clearly didn't get home. Dropping back to a dead 3 miles at Weatherby will suit him down to the ground. He used to be a slightly dodgy jumper, but he's been much better in that regard in his last two or three starts. So with his yard continuing in fair form, I think he's still on a winning mark, despite the fact that he's got top weight, and he's going to be hard to beat. There are other interesting horses in the race, obviously. Good to Know finds it hard to win, but is much better than his latest run suggests. He was pulled up at Ludlow in December, but the plan for him at that stage was to run in the Welsh National, which, of course, his trainer Kerry Lee won with Mountainous in the end. So he'd run very well at Ludlow in his previous start, but he needed to get a penalty if he was going to get into the Welsh National. So the plan was to get a penalty first time out at Ludlow. He finished second, which meant that he had to run again. So he ended up being turned out rather more quickly than ideal and ran no sort of race on his next start. Didn't jump particularly well, but he's a horse who's probably best with time between his races. He's a little bit delicate. And now that he's had the best part of 9 weeks off, I expect him to bounce back to form. The only issue with him is that he does find it hard to win. He's been second four times in his last seven starts without getting his head in front. But I think you'll see a better performance from him. And if you're looking for one for the forecast, it could be him. Bally Oliver is probably going to be favourite, I would say, based on the promise he showed last time out. He's not the easiest to catch right, but he's very useful in his day. And he came back to form for the first time this season when a close third and a fast finishing third to Sonny the One at Taunton last time out. He caught a lot of eyes there. And as a result, I think he'd be reasonably popular in the betting. The issue with him that day was that he got badly outpaced. He was never going to win the race, but he finished with a rattle to get close at the line. He needs to be racing over 3.25, 3.5 miles. And again, although this is slightly further than Taunton, I think the fact that Weatherby is dead flat and not really a test of stamina means he's liable to get outpaced at a crucial stage again. So I'd want to be against him here. But if he did run over a longer trip in his next start, then he'd be of interest.
OK, but King of the World's the pick for you then, Rory, in the 4.10. We'll go over to Kempston now then for their 3.50. A good race. We've got a handicap chase over 3 miles. This is a Class 3 event with 13 of them down to contest it. Anything jumping off the page here, Rory?
Really, really tough race. Two or three horses I like in this contest, but one or two of those I'd want to be avoiding at the moment. I've napped a couple of these on their most recent time, maybe three of them recently, and I'll go through those. Silver Grove deserves a mention. He was a very unlucky loser at Sandown early in the season, if you recall. Unseated Tom David on the flat at Sandown, having held what looked a winning advantage at the time. It turns out that the webbing on his saddle broke.
Right.
And he ended up, he tried to kick his feet out of the irons, got unbalanced at an unfortunate time and came out the side. He would have won that race. And he was able to back that up when winning at Newbury on his next start. And that was over 3.25 miles. He looked by far the best horse in that race, made all the running, travelled very strongly and got very tired late on, which meant that he got closed down by the second and third. The bare form is suspect enough, but the way he shaped was very promising. The only worry I'd have with him was that was a desperately hard race that he had. And clearly connections haven't wanted to turn him out quickly. So he's been off 45 days since that. Could easily bounce straight back, and clearly a right-hander tracks no trouble to him, as he showed at Sandown. So I'd respect his chances. The one I'm going to go for is A Good Skin, who comes here on the back of a bad run. but a very easy to forgive bad run. I napped him last time. He ran a really good race on his seasonal reappearance, his second start of the season, rather, when finishing third in the it was the Badger Ales at Wincanton. That looked like it was going to be a good springboard for him. He finished the third to drop out Joe and Royal Palladium, with the likes of Forgotten Gold and Carl's Destrier in behind. And that form's worked out well enough. It's always a competitive race. He should have done better at Cheltenham last time out, but the tactics, for all he's normally a hold-up horse, were deeply inadequate on the day. He was dropping back to 2.5 miles from 3 miles one, and he was dropped right out of the back of the field. And that was a race dominated by the front runner, as almost every 2.5 mile handicap chase at Cheltenham this season has been. So he had very little chance of getting involved. He ended up passing two or three horses late in the day, but he was never seen with a chance in that, and he's better judged on previous efforts. The return to 3 miles will suit him. This track should be fine for him as well, given he ran well at Wincanton, and he's a winner at Ludlow. So he might be a bigger price than he should be because of that nine on his form card, and I would make him close to favourite for this race. I do need to mention one or two others, though. Audacious Plan is a horse I'm convinced has a big race in him at some stage. The problem with him is that the yards horses have been running appallingly again. Several fancied horses at Cheltenham on trials day. One of them ran well. The one that wasn't fancied ran well in the Cleeve Hurdle. The others ran deplorably and were beaten at halfway. And there's clearly something amiss with some of the horses in Rebecca Curtis's yard. Difficult to know which ones are which. He's not been seen for 90 days because he finished. He picked up an injury when pulled up at Cheltenham in November on Paddy Power Day. His previous run was a really good one. He hit the front around the last and just got run out of things at Cheltenham in October. Again, had shaped very well in his reappearance when clearly needing the run. And he's on a good mark. He hasn't gone up really in the weights this season. Started the year rated 130. Rated 131 now, having finished second at Punchestown on his final start last season. That was a really, really good performance. And one that suggests that races around sort of 3.5 miles will see him in a good light. He's a type who will do well in the old Whitbread Gold Cup come the end of the season. But I couldn't back him until I see better signs from Rebecca Curtis's yard. But he's one to keep an eye on. And Ned Stark is another one that I've been with this season. I backed him anti-post for the Hennessy. And he wasn't completely disgraced that day, but he found it just a little bit too much of a test in the end. Since then, he's been pulled up at Kempton, but he was almost brought down at the first fence. And you can draw a line through that. So again, his last four runs read 8.68p, but he's shaped a lot better than that. And although the handicapper hasn't exactly given him a lot of leeway, he's capable of running a bigger race as well. So plenty of interesting horses there, but the pick for me would be a good skin.
Good skin for Rory then at Kempton. We'll go on to one on the all weather now. This is the 7.45 from Wolverhampton, a 7 furlong handicap for us here with 9 runners down to contest this class 4 and quite a few one last time out as well, Rory.
Yeah, it looks a competitive race on paper. Plenty of in-form horses, which is nice to see. The pick, I think, is Dugan, who looks to be improving at a fair rate of knots. Of course, represents our own John Babb and the Shropshire Wolves. Ran very well when second over course and distance 2 starts ago, and then showed improved form and shaped very, very well indeed when beating Corporal Maddox, who reopposes by a nose at Lingfield, despite not really getting the run of the race. Travelled well, but allowed the runner-up to get first run and only ran him down on the line. That was definitely a career-best performance for me. It was a very good effort on the clock as well, and yet you get the impression he could have done better still with a slightly different ride. Josephine Gordon rode him last time out, and she's clearly good value for a £7 claim, but it's no bad thing that Adam Kirby is back on board here. Adam's won on the horse twice at Kempton and Lingfield. And although he raced the midfield last time out, he can make the running. He made the running in his previous start. And there aren't many front runners in the race. The obvious danger is Superstar, who's done really well for Mick Appleby. But the one occasion where he made the running, it didn't suit him at all, and he ran well below par. So he seems to be dependent on a strong early pace. When he came back to form at Chelmsford last time out, they went reasonably hard in front. He came from a long way behind to win. That suits him very well indeed. But there's no obvious front runner in the race. You've got the likes of Depth Charge, who could possibly go forward, and Black Dave, who's ridden by the inexperienced Allard Beach. He could make the running. But to be honest, this race is set up for someone, an experienced jockey, to take it by the scruff of the neck. And the ideal jockey in that situation is Adam Kirby, who will, if he sees the race is going to be run strongly, he will tuck in behind the front two. If he sees there's no early pace, he won't think twice about stepping it up and going on himself. And that would give him an advantage over Superstar. So Dugan would get a fairly confident vote there.
Dugan, the pick then for Rory in the 7:45 at Wolverhampton. Just give us a quick summary, please, then, of your four picks for the action on Friday.
In the 3 o'clock at Weatherby, I go for Maxi T. The 4:10, King of the Wolves. In the 3:50 at Kempton, A Good Skin. And finally, Dugan in the 7:45 at Wolves.
Thank you very much, Rory, and best of luck on Friday.
Thank you very much.
And remember to join us here on Racing Radio on Friday afternoon from 1:10 p.m. with Gordon Brown, Gary Capewell and Paddy Aspel guiding you through the action at Kempton, Weatherby, Wolverhampton and Dundalk. You've been listening to the William Hill Daily Racing Podcast.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.